Welcome to the Gun Show, where we talk about pistols, revolvers, rifles, shotguns, ammunition, concealed carry, personal defense training, and attacks on our beloved Second Amendment right to protect ourselves and our families. Folks, this morning, as always, we're going to open our phone line to answer your firearms, ammunition, and personal defense questions. Dee Wamper will be joining us to talk about the current NRA financial scandal and more. Also, we've got local attorney and firearms dealer Craig Heideman and I are going to talk about choosing the right CCW holster for quick personal defense. Then we'll close out today's show talking with Victor Young of U.S. Law Shield about their next Gun Talk event at 6 p.m. this coming Tuesday evening in Classic Rock Coffee. Folks, we're also very proud to have U.S. Law Shield as a sponsor. They want to help us help you better protect yourself and your family. U.S. Law Shield, they're your legal defense for your self-defense. Because if you own a gun and you must defend yourself, you'll need U.S. Law Shield. When you join U.S. Law Shield, you'll have 24/7 emergency access to an attorney when you need it most. At U.S. Law Shield, you'll pay zero attorney's fees for criminal or civil proceedings for covered events, even for appeals. U.S. Law Shield has no caps or copays. Every U.S. Law Shield member gets the best program in the country for only $10.95 a month. Go to U.S. Law Shield, or you can go to mattkinovey.com and click on our direct link to U.S. Law Shield and sign up today. Remember, your freedom and your family's financial future depend on it. Also, we want to let you know that our next $40 CCW class, that's the lowest price in town, is Saturday, May 25th. And we have $50 practical handgun, rifle, active shooter, and home defense firearms courses available. Just go to our website, mattkinovey.com, to sign up for any of our classes. And while you're there, check out our free training videos and text training tips. As always, if you want to contact us, you can go to our radio show website, thegunshowradio.com. Or you can email me at matt@mattkinovey.com. That's matt@mattkinovey.com. And you can even call in or text us this morning right here in the studio at 417-447-5743. That's 447-5743. Right now, here's our local crime stats, always brought to you by our good friends Dee Wampler and Joe Passanisi, as well as Terry and Brenda at A Advanced Bail Bonds.
Good morning, Matt. Our crime stats are going to be running from Saturday, April 27th through Friday, May 3rd. So far this week, we've had 67 calls for assaults, 47 calls for burglaries, and 14 calls for shots fired. So let's go ahead and break down those shots fired. On Saturday, we had two, one at the intersection of West Groton Street and North Yolen Drive. The second one of Saturday was at the intersection of South Crenshaw Road and East Ridgecrest Street. On Sunday, we had one. It was at the 800 block of South Patton Avenue. On Monday, we had three. One at the 3000 block of West Edgewood Street. One at the intersection of South Roseland Avenue and East Murr Street. And another at the intersection of West Chestnut Expressway and Northwest Avenue. On Tuesday, we had two. One at the 2400 block of South Kings Avenue. And the second one of Tuesday was at the 1000th block of East Battlefield Road. On Wednesday, we had three, one at the intersection of South Grant Avenue and West Sonship Street, one at the 900 block of East University Street, and the third one was at the 900 block of South Douglas Avenue. On Thursday, we had one, it was at the 500 block of South Harrison Street, and on Friday, we had two, one at the intersection of West Kearney Street and North Broadway Avenue, and the second one at the 1900 block of South Weaver Avenue. So once again, we had 67 calls for assaults, 47 calls for burglaries, and 14 calls for shots fired.
Crime in Springfield. Crime in Springfield. Unbelievable. It's here to stay. Folks, get the training you need to better protect yourself and your family. Remember, when crime is seconds away, law enforcement's always minutes away. And that's just the way it's going to happen. Folks, I'm going to throw the mic over to Dee Wampler for a moment, but I want to let you know that Dee's segment is always brought to you by my very good friend, former firearms student, and great Christian business owner, Scott Estes, and his knowledgeable staff at Wildcat Tool Rental. That's wildcattoolrental.com. Dee is going to talk to a little bit about something we've been beating up on in the past, and that's the NRA and what's going on with them. And it looks like they're in some financial trouble, and there's quite a bit of a scandal. It looks like maybe Ollie North has blown the whistle on it, and now the cat's coming out of the bag. D, go ahead.
Yeah, and I know why the shots fired were down this week. It's because it was raining. Everybody was inside. Now, you wait, because the 6 years I spent in the prosecutor's office years ago, we'd always wait till June, July, August, and September. That's when the neighbors go out, they get into boundary disputes, they get into peace disturbance disputes, and that's where people start threatening each other. So you watch, just mark my words, in June, July, and August, we're going to have shots fired. They're going to reach new levels this year. Okay, well, who wouldn't like the NRA? I mean, we had Charlton Heston. He played Moses, you know, in Ben-Hur. And then we had, John Wayne, I think, was kind of active in the NRA. And, I mean, Ollie North, who doesn't like Ollie? Lieutenant Colonel, retired Marine Corps, Purple Heart, Bronze Star. I mean, what a hero. He's the president of it. And everything looks pretty good. Matt, I always kind of like the NRA, and I know you've not exactly been a fan of the NRA. Well, this last meeting they had in Indianapolis, it looks like that Ollie started challenging the good old boys. And the good old boys is Wayne LaPierre. And what happens is it looks like that Wayne LaPierre was getting some extra money from the NRA, which has 5 million members, incidentally. And they pay about $40 million a year to an advertising agency. And this advertising agency then kind of launders, if you will, a straw party type transfer back to him. And he spent or recorded about $200,000 in 1 year on clothing. $200,000 on clothing. And in addition to that, $240,000 a year on travel costs. So he was staying in really nice hotels for lengthy periods of times in nice places, traveling around the world. And the bad thing is the board of the NRA didn't exactly know all of this because it was going through this Ackerman agency, which was an advertising agency. And then in addition to that, he didn't report this as income. And, of course, now the New York Attorney General and the IRS, everybody's got to get into the act. And they're all saying, well, Wayne Pierre got this money and he didn't pay income tax on it. Therefore, now we've got some liberal attorney generals that are chafing at the bit to get an audit of the NRA and of Wayne LaPierre and start prosecuting some Second Amendment enthusiasts. So here we go. Now the NRA is going to be spending a lot of money on law firms in legal costs and for accountants. And so, yeah, it's a big organization. I mean, I hate to see it. I really hate to see it. They've got, you know, a couple of magazines, and I get a lot of their emails and their literature. And, you know, what do I know? I went to their convention last year in Dallas. They had 8,000 exhibitors, and all these people were showing up. They had, I think, close to 100,000 people that went, of which a lot of them were packing heat. I mean, it was the safest place to go to a convention that I'd ever seen. But now it doesn't look too good. And it's going to go on. It's going to go on here, you know, probably until the next election, right, until 2020. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we've got. We've got problems ahead with the NRA.
Well, before we step into a break, folks, just think about it. The NRA has been making money from their members, from advertisement, from training fees, from exhibitor fees, and yet they're in financial trouble. Where's all this money gone to? Also, now the NRA is going to use our member money to pay for legal attorneys' fees to protect them and defend them against their illegal act from stealing the money out of the NRA that we paid in. And that's the way it's going to work. Folks, that's the NRA for you. That's how they've digressed into nothing but sounds like what Jimmy Hoffa was doing to the Teamsters Union. We're going to talk a little more about that on the other side of the break. Stick around. I'm Matt Canovey. This is your gun show on 104.1 KSGF, Springfield's News Talk FM. Folks, welcome back. We've been talking with Dee Wampler about the NRA financial scandal that's going on. And again, that's now you understand why the NRA didn't do anything to protect us when the government went after the bump fire owners. And you were wondering, where's that money? Where's the lobbying? Where's all that going? Well, guess what? It's going into LaPierre's pocket and allowing him to live this nice lifestyle while you and I, the gun owners, are ending up footing a bill for him. D, we beat up on that a little bit, and I know you've got another idea here, some more information about church security.
Well, we talked last couple of weeks about how terrible it is in our society today. Missouri has a law, 571-107, Missouri statutes, that subsection 14, you can't carry a weapon in a church or another place of religious worship without the consent of the minister or persons representing the religious organization. You can't do it, in other words, kind of unless you're invited. And I attend a couple of churches, and they're not the biggest churches around, but they have 25, 28, 30 people on the security team at different times. It's a shame that this has to go on. I was checking the figures on it and talked with you this week. For a period of 25 years, from 1980 to 2005, there were only 137 church shootings. When I say only, and about a fourth of them ended in somebody being killed, which is not good. But then fast forward to 2006, for 10 years only, we jump from 2006 to 2016, there's 147 church shootings. So I don't know how that computes out, but it's 200 or 300 times more shootings each decade. And more and more people are getting killed. And, of course, we had the synagogue shooting 2 weeks ago, and the liberals are all saying, well, we got to have more laws now. But it was a good guy. It was a military veteran that charged the shooter. He didn't have a gun, but he had training. And he just happened to be there in the synagogue and went towards the gunfire and disarmed the guy, at least stopped him, and then the guy ran. But, I mean, somebody had training, somebody had courage, somebody challenged the shooter. And these are the figures. I mean, these figures don't lie. And it's a shame that we're going to probably – there was some legislation in Congress to protect churches so that churches couldn't be sued in these situations. Of course, that bill didn't get anywhere. But that's the situation. More and more church shootings, more and more people getting killed. The figures are not looking real good.
And folks, we're – putting together an upcoming event where it's going to be free, where Dee and I will be talking to any church that wants to attend about church security, some of the legal aspects that they have to factor in when they've established their church security teams and training and so on. So just keep an ear out for that. We'll have more information in the future. Dee, you talk about training. I'm going to change gears. I'm going to move over to Craig Heidemann. And Craig, you're going to talk about holsters, some of the basics. We're getting back to some of the basics. And a lot of people go out and they buy holsters. And, Craig, I know you've seen it. I've seen it. And they'll buy holsters, and they'll look for, number one, is comfort. And I try and tell them, folks, accessibility means more than comfort. A lot of people, again, they look for comfort and they look for concealability. They want to hide it, and they want to have it comfortable. I said, well, that's great, but if you can't get to it when you need it, it doesn't matter how comfortable or concealable it was. It has to be accessible. So whenever you look for a holster, you want accessibility. What do you think?
Well, I think, like most things in life, it's about compromise. If you've got the best holster in the world, but it causes you blisters and you can't stand it, so you don't carry your gun, you haven't done yourself any favors. So, you know, I say kind of tongue-in-cheek, but with a lot of truth, the best holster is the one that you will choose to put on your body every day and carry it with you wherever you go. So if there is a holster that allows you to do that, that's the best holster for you. But I was doing the Springfield Amateur Radio Network last night, and I got this topic from one of the Springfield, Missouri Amateur Radio Club members, and she said, I want to know about holsters. I don't understand. Inside the waistband, outside the waistband, appendix carry, what kind of holsters are out there? And that was a great question. So we thought we'd go a little bit back to basics today and just kind of go over the various kinds for folks that might not be familiar with what we're talking about. So there's all kinds of rigs available. There's inside the waistband that goes inside your belt against your body. There's outside the waistband that goes out, hooks on your belt and hangs off the side of your body. There's an appendix carry holster, which can be an inside the waistband type holster that you carry up. Oh, think to the right or the left of your belly button. Some people might call it gangster carry, but it's actually my favorite way to carry a concealed handgun. But between inside the waistband and outside the waistband probably allows the greatest amount of flexibility. It's probably the most common type of holster. And there's two different kinds. The most popular type involves some kind of kydex, which is a moldable plastic. Let's just assume that all holsters are out there for all normal, popular kinds of concealed carry pistols. A lot of folks will use what's called a paddle-type outside the waistband holster, where instead of having to clip it onto a gun belt, which would be a load-bearing belt that can carry the weight of a gun and support it, they'll use these paddle-type holsters. I don't recommend those. Well, they're easy to clip on. They're easy to take off. But they don't give you the kind of retention that you need, and they don't carry your pistol in a predictable orientation. So a lot of the holsters today are modifiable, so you can tip them forward just a smidge, or you can make them come straight up. We prefer straight up, but if you are the kind of person that you need to adjust it because maybe you have a shoulder injury and you can't draw it straight up, you need to adjust it. All of these inside and outside the waistband holsters that we're going to talk about usually are adjustable. But I like, if you're going to carry an outside the waistband holster, number one, however you carry it, you got to have a gun belt. DeSantis, Safariland, Galco, they make belts that are reinforced with a plastic core that will hold your gun up, and it will make it more comfortable for you to wear. So don't forget the gun belt. Inside the waistband, that offers the greatest anonymity when carrying concealed. It lets you tuck your shirt over the holster and makes it nearly invisible. One of our local companies here in Southwest Missouri, Crossbreed, makes a great holster that's tuckable. And what that means is you could put a pair of shorts on and a t-shirt, all right, put your concealed carry pistol against your body, and your shirt will tuck over it so all somebody that would in the public would see is one or maybe two clips, little black clips on your belt that blend in with your belt. Very, very hard to detect. Now, inside the waistband is going to prevent something that we call printing. Printing is where the form or the shape of your gun is visible under your cover garment or your clothing. That is not desirable, folks, because it lets the bad guys know this guy's got a gun. Maybe they're going to start picking on you first in the event that they decide to cause trouble. And in some states, it's actually illegal to allow your firearm to be seen through your clothing, and you can be charged with a crime. So printing is bad. Inside the waistband is going to give you the most freedom from printing. Let's talk about forward carry of the inside waistband, which is appendix carry. Now, you and I were talking during the break, Matt, about how good is a gun in your car if you can't get to it. If you're carrying inside or outside the waistband and you're carrying it just on the side of your hip or even back towards the small of your back, that's going to get into your seat belt. It's going to be behind you, and it's going to be super uncomfortable if you're driving long distances. Appendix carry solves that problem. Now, a lot of people say, I don't want to move my pistol up to my belly button area because then it's pointing at Little Jim and the twins. All right? Let me tell you, I haven't found a gun that's gone off by itself without something operating the trigger. So if you got a proper holster and you affix it, to your body, and you put your gun in there, it's not going to go off. And that gun is going to be, number one, comfortable, number two, heavily concealed, and number three, accessible. And in my opinion, those are three of the main goals that we're trying to shoot for with a holster. Now let's talk about some other options for the ladies. Women have more options, but it requires more practice. If a lady's going to carry a gun in a purse, by all means do that. Please, please have a holster inside the purse or have a gun purse. These ladies that just take a Ruger LCP and throw it in their purse and let it rattle it around there scare me to death. Not because they shouldn't have a gun, but they just, you go in there to reach for your keys, and when you're reaching, you're grabbing, and you grab the wrong thing, and next thing you know, you're putting holes where it don't need to be. So if you're going to have a gun in your purse, you got to practice with that. It's going to take a draw time of perhaps a second, second and a half. And if you practice, it's going to be maybe out to 4 seconds, maybe a little longer if you're good. So if you're going to have a gun in a purse, practice with it. The ladies have other options. The flashbang holster, which attaches to your brassiere, is also a good option if you practice with that. You have to use a smaller gun, maybe a bad breath gun that's good for bad breath distances like the Ruger LCP or something like that. But in a gunfight, the best gun is the one you've got, and if that's the one you've got, that'll do the trick. So those flashbang holsters are also pretty slick. The purse holsters that I really like, the gun-toting mamas, ladies, are the ones that probably have the most versatile, fashionable purses out there. And we've got those in stock at the Arms Concierge here in Springfield. So give me a call on that, 224-4335, or check us out at www.armsconcierge.com. They also have a cable strap in the purse strap that keeps somebody from coming up and just cutting your purse off your body. That kind of snatch and grab crime is very prevalent in big cities and particularly overseas. So those are great purses to keep it over your shoulder and attached to your body. Nobody's going to take that off of you, at least voluntarily.
Well, let's go ahead. We're going to step into a break. We're going to pick it up on the other side with some more information from Craig about choosing the right concealed carry holster. He and I will talk about it in a little more detail. We encourage you to stick around. I'm Matt Canovey. This is your gun show on 104.1 KSGF, Springfield's News Talk FM. Folks, welcome back. I'm with Craig Heidemann, and I want to let you know his segment is brought to you by my very good friend, former firearms student, and again, a great Christian business owner, Don Carricker, at iwantagreathomeloan.com. Now, check out this review of Don Carricker and his staff. Nobody does a better job at taking all the stress out of buying a home than Don. He is unequivocally the best in the business. Look no further for your home loan. Folks, says it all. Thanks, Don Carricker, for sponsoring this segment. He is a great personal friend and a great friend of the Springfield community. Craig, we've been talking about concealed carry holsters, trying to get back to some of the basics. I'm a big fan of the vertical holsters. I think they make the gun a lot easier to access and to draw and get a better grip on it. And one of the big things I like is, and I recommend to my students, is you have to have some sort of gun retention, something that's going to hold the gun in the holster if you have to run, jostle around with somebody. So it's going to stay in a holster. I prefer what I refer to as a passive gun retention, something that's going to hold the gun in without you having to manually disengage the retention. Now, if you've got a manual retention, all right, that's good if you're going to train enough so that it becomes muscle memory. That means you don't even have to think about it, and you automatically flip the gun retention manual safety off so you can draw the gun. Most people are not going to train that much.
Nope.
So get yourself something that works when you want it to work, but lets go when you want it to let go.
Yeah, let's mention that. Blackhawk makes a product called the Serpa holster, which I personally believe is very dangerous. You can check out a video of my good friend Tex Scrivener down in Texas shooting himself drawing from a Serpa holster. The Serpa holster is a level 2 retention holster, which requires you to press a button located exactly where the trigger is to get the gun to release from the holster. So you're pressing in with your finger, drawing the gun up in the draw stroke, and then going to bring it out on target. And what Mr. Scrivener did is to press the trigger on his Kimber 45, putting a bullet down his thigh coming out his knee. Now, he turned out okay, and he used it as an opportunity to educate us about what's wrong with Serpa holsters. So, Craig, my personal opinion is they're not for me. I think you'd mentioned that maybe the military was not allowing them to be used anymore. There may be some restrictions on them as well.
Yeah, I had heard from Sergeant Major, forget his name. He used to work with us here on the show. I'll remember it later. I'm bad with names. But he had told me that the military had now outlawed the Serpa holsters because they had the same problem. People had it up on their body armor at an angle in front, and when they'd grab it and they'd put their finger on the detention device, retention device, the manual retention device, they'd flip it off, and as they pulled the gun out, their finger was pressing right where the trigger was at, and the gun went off, almost shot the guy next to him.
Well, a little bit of gun history. What was the first retention device for a horse soldier? It was the lanyard that went around over your shoulder. Your arm went through it, it went down to your pistol, and that kept the gun on your body attached to the lanyard loop. The original Beretta, my 92 pistols, all had lanyards on them. A lot of the Brownings did as well. So you got to keep the gun on you, and the best pistol retention device is going to be the level one, which is a passive retention, and it's going to allow friction to keep it attached to you. All right, one more note.
Sure.
It's my handy pro tip. Don't be a goober. If you go to the gun show and spend $6 on the best Chinese nylon holster that one of the local vendors has for sale, and you decide that you're going to make that your open carry holster for your high point and head to Walmart, you're a goober. Don't do that. Invest some money in a holster. Be prepared to put an investment into your holster because your life may depend on it. This is something that you're going to wear every day. It's going to become your friend. You're going to hopefully fall in love with it. So spend some money and get a high-quality holster that not only serves the job, does the job well, but doesn't make you look like a goober.
Well, and folks, can't say it enough. What's your life worth? Surely more than $6. Okay, think about this. This thing has got to hold the gun secure. So when you reach for it, it's where you're reaching. It's not flopping around. It's got to be something that's going to last you over several years, okay? So you want something that's durable. You want something that's vertical. You also want to have some sort of passive gun retention. Folks, all of these cost money. Now, I'm not talking about spending $1,000. You could spend $50, $55, and get yourself a decent holster. We offer them on our website. Go to mattkenobi.com. We've got them in leather or kydex. That's all I carry. The staff with me, that's all they carry are the holsters that we've designed. And they give you good accessibility, vertical access, good passive gun retention, everything you need for personal defense. Craig?
Yeah. The other thing is the concept of leather versus pure kydex. Leather is going to break in like a nice dress shoe. It's going to mold to your body. It's going to absorb sweat. It's going to get better with time. Kydex is going to give you a very predictable fit. It's going to stay the same. It's not going to change. What you see is what you get. But if whatever holster you get, all right, it's kind of like if you think back to dating, don't judge somebody necessarily by the first date. It takes 10 days or so, 7 to 10 days of wearing a holster every day to know whether you're going to love it or hate it. So I'm not saying that you have to marry the first one you try, but you got to give it a chance. So whatever you pick, wear it every day, day and night, for 7 to 10 days before you decide if it's going to work out long term.
All right, folks, hopefully that's going to help you out. We're going to step into a break, pick it up on the other side. Our next segment is Victor Young of U.S. Law Shield. He's going to talk with us about our next get-together event at 6 p.m. this coming Tuesday evening, a classic rock coffee. Stick around. I'm Matt Canovi. This is your gun show on 104.1 KSGF, Springfield's News Talk FM. Folks, welcome back. This last segment of the show is sponsored by our good friends at U.S. Law Shield. Remember, they're your legal defense for your self-defense. Now we're going to close out the show with my good friend Victor Young of U.S. Law Shield, and he's going to talk about their next Gun Talk event starting at 6 p.m. this coming Tuesday evening at Classic Rock Coffee. Now, we've had several get-togethers down there. Turnout's been very good. We encourage you to come on out if you have questions about guns. Now, I'll be there. We'll also have D. Wampler oftentimes stops in for some legal input, and Victor will be there. And there's a lot of misinformation out there about not only firearms, but the legal aspects of carrying a firearm and the legal aspects of using a firearm. And that's what these events are set up for, is to help clarify some of this misinformation and help people better protect themselves and their families. Information is power, but you have to have the information to have the power. And that's what these events are for. Victor, thanks so much for joining us. Talk a little bit about your upcoming event this coming Tuesday evening.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. This event's going to be a little more unique. You know, we, like you said, we've had a lot of events that we've talked about. We've talked about various aspects from, you know, the justified use of deadly force. We've talked about the laws of search, seizure, and arrest. Just a multitude of topics. Well, one of the most common requests that we've had after these events is to be able to dig in a little bit about the misinformation, not so much the actual legal side, but the things that we read in the newspaper that really are misleading. You know, we hear a lot of things, especially in some of these horrible things. I heard Dee talking earlier with, you know, with church violence, school violence, these mass shootings that occur. And a lot of media outlets seem to focus on certain aspects. Well, a lot of this stuff is very predictable. And gun violence is actually on the decline nationwide. Part of that has to do with the fact that concealed carry ownership is becoming more popular. Laws are becoming a little bit more relaxed regarding lawfully owned firearms. And these are the things we want to talk about a little bit. Statistically speaking, you know, scissors kill more people in the U.S. than legally owned firearms do.
Yeah, and that's, see, people, they, and the anti-gun people pump up all this stuff, and more people get killed in auto accidents than with firearms. The vast difference in the number of people who get killed, and most of those accidents, over 50%, have some sort of alcohol or drug-related cause. So if you really want to go ahead and be concerned about life being lost out in the public sector, vehicle accidents and the use of people being intoxicated, either intoxicated or under the influence, is a bigger cause of death than any kind of firearm. Also, AR-15s. How many times did the anti-gun people say, oh, that's an assault weapon, all that? And if you look at how many times AR-15s are actually used to hurt people, it is less than 0.1%. And if you compare that to how many people die in these senseless auto accidents, folks, these are the facts we'll give you at these events, or some of the facts, so that when your anti-gun friends start talking about all this stuff, you can start coming back with some facts and evidence showing how firearms are actually the best thing that can protect you and your family personally in your home or out in the public.
Absolutely, and you're right. Rifles in general, AR-15 or you know, your .22 rifle inherited from your grandpa, the statistics with rifles being used in violent crimes are so low, they're almost insignificant. Now, don't get me wrong, any violence is significant to some degree. But the constant attacks, you know, basically saying that guns have the ability or are evil, again, the guns are a tool. It's people who become evil.
Well, sure, and that's it. And most people don't realize that guns protect more people and stop crime much more than they cause illegal death.
Well, you know, okay, so I'm going to give away a little bit about what we're going to be talking about on Tuesday, but statistically speaking, a firearm is 300 times more likely to be used to stop a crime than to commit one. It's estimated, according to the FBI, that about 2.5 million crimes are stopped every single year simply by the presence of a firearm. Less than 4% of the time is that firearm actually discharged.
And now, I've been in a situation, not going to go into a lot of detail, where I have just put my hand on the gun. I've been in a situation where it was justified deadly force, but I opted, because I had some training and I knew how the situation was unfolding. I felt confident that I didn't have to draw the gun, simply putting my hand on it and saying, hey, this is not a good idea, deterred the whole crime. Now, if it's happened to me more than once, and it has, how many other people has it happened to? And those statistics are never tabulated. So it's probably more than the number you just laid out.
Quite possibly. And I know that some of the statistics that are out there are a lot of estimates based on non-reported crimes.
Sure.
And that's true with anything. You know, one of the interesting things, one of the reasons we wanted to have this conversation too is because the attendees have asked for it. But the interesting part about it is, personally, you know, I've had two incidents in my life where I felt where violent force may be justified. believe it or not, March 21st, the last event we did, I was the victim of a road rage incident right in front of our venue.
Wow.
And while it wasn't necessary that I pulled any weapons, it was quite unique.
And, you know, the positive is that having a firearm gives you the solution to any potential threat situation.
You know, Matt, look, there are only two ways that people can get you to do something. One is by force, and one is by reason. Gun ownership helps minimize their options.
Oh, yeah. And folks, we've said it before, and it only makes common sense, the fact that the gun is the ultimate equalizer. I mean, you could have an 80-year-old lady, and how many times you hear this, where 80-year-old lady is in a home, somebody breaks in because she's all alone, and they're victimizing her because they think she's an easy target, yet she's got a handgun, and she backs off four or five bad guys and holds them till the police get there. It's the ultimate equalizer. It is the only tool at your disposal that makes you as big and bad as any bad guy out there, as long as you can pull the trigger on this gun, aim it, and pull the trigger effectively. You're as big and bad as the baddest guy out there.
With proper training.
Yeah, the key is you got to get that training. Too many people have a firearm. Now, folks, at this event, we're going to talk about ammunition. Okay, we're going to talk about, we'll review holsters. We just talked about that earlier in today's show, but we'll review that. We're going to answer questions about church security, home defense. Home defense opens up a plethora of questions. What equipment? Okay, not just firearms, but other personal defense equipment, safety equipment, physical security countermeasures, also firearms. There's a lot of different information out there about what firearm is the best for home defense. I don't think any particular firearm is the best, and we've got facts and evidence we'll talk about at this event. Also, ammunition. What types of ammunition are best for personal defense? What types of ammunition are best for practice, for training? A lot of things you might want to... You've thought about in the past, but never actually had somebody you could sit down and talk to and answer those questions for you.
Absolutely. One of the other things that has come up a lot recently, not only the statistics and the justification of owning firearms and defending yourself, but also what about interstate travel?
Amen.
You know, every state has different laws. You know, Oklahoma's fairly close. They've recently, you know, passed constitutional carry or permitless carry. That goes into effect in the near months. You know, we need to understand that, especially if we're going to travel there. Other states have different laws regarding concealed carry. Some states will only allow you to carry one concealed weapon. Okay, what's a weapon? Well, you know, a pen knife or a pocket knife. You know, if you carry multiple ballistic weapons, you know, that could be an issue.
Well, and most people don't realize, and Craig touched base on it before he left, in Oklahoma, the gun can't print. If the law enforcement person can see the gun, even though it's concealed, if it's printing, you could now be charged. And that's something that people don't understand. Also, another thing is, and we'll talk about in a little more detail, or you'll talk about in more detail, Missouri is not a constitutional carry. We are permitless carry. There's a lot of misinformation about that.
Absolutely. And there we go back to the media. I have several friends and associates in law enforcement, and that was the one thing they talked about was, you know, when that passed, when that veto was overridden, the media kind of said, oh, you know, you can now carry concealed without a permit, so on and so forth. Well, there's at least 62 municipalities in Missouri where you cannot concealed carry without a permit. And the reason being is because the way the law was written, you can carry where it's already legal to open carry. Well, certain municipalities had ordinances that banned open carry. They didn't talk about that. The other thing they didn't talk about was when the law went into effect. So in August of 2016, we had people concealing carrying firearms when it wasn't legal to do so until January of 2017.
And Victor, also now, and this, it's terrible that this is happening, but it's happening. Oftentimes people read into the law what they want it to say.
Yes.
Instead of what it really says. A lot of people think now marijuana is legal in the state of Missouri because of the medical marijuana statute that's been, and also how that's going to affect gun ownership. People think, well, hey, if it's going to help people medically, maybe that's a good thing. All right, well, guess what, guys? On the federal firearms form, it says, are you a user of marijuana or illegal, okay? And it's asking, and if you say yes, they can't sell you the gun. So this really spills out. So these are some of the questions we're going to be fielding at the event this coming Tuesday evening, 6 p.m. at Classic Rock Coffee. Be there. You're going to have correct, accurate information from the right people who are going to give you the correct, accurate information so you can make the educated and correct decisions on what you're going to do with your firearm and what's upcoming. Go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Victor.
No problem at all. You mentioned the Missouri Amendment 2. Of course, you know, that's a state law. You know, the feds still view marijuana as a Schedule 1 illicit substance. And guess who regulates firearms purchases and you know, firearms law in general? And that's the federal government. There is some misinformation out there. And yeah, we're happy to discuss that. That's, to be honest, we don't know what's going to happen. Missouri doesn't even know 100% how they're going to handle the availability or the distribution of decriminalized marijuana. It's still in the process.
Yeah, Dr. Del Campo, who's a friend of this show and oftentimes been here, he's going to come on in a future show and talk more detail about that and the ramifications of it. Victor, I want you to go ahead in the last minute here before we take our final break. I want you to go ahead and let our listeners know a little bit about where, when, and how to be there and how they can get a hold of you. Do they have to sign up? Is there something on your website where they can go check into?
Absolutely. This is a little unique because this is going to be really in response to the attendees who have been there in the past. Of course, everybody is welcome. We're going to be at Classic Rock Coffee at 6 p.m. Tuesday night, this coming Tuesday night. Please, it's free to all. You're welcome to come, grab a cup of coffee, and you know, let's sit down and have a roundtable discussion. So that honestly, we need to unify as a community, make sure that we're informed, and we understand that what we're doing is on the right side of the law.
Fantastic, folks! Once again, Classic Rock Coffee this coming Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Be there for U.S. Law Shield's representation on answering information about ammunition, personal defense, church security, and so on. Let me go ahead and thank U.S. Law Shield for their sponsorship of this segment. I also want to thank Sarah, our producer, Dee Wampler, Craig Heidemann, Victor Young for joining us. I also want to thank you, our listeners, and our callers. I'm Matt Canovey. This is your gun show because we really are here to help you stay safe out there. So stay tuned.